Good evening to the good evening. Welcome to the Laughing Monkey Music Show. Today we have Alcatraz members Joe Strump and Jimmy Waldo. How are you?
Good. Always good.
Good. We're good.
Good.
Always good. Exactly.
Always good. I'm
I live a
glad.
charmed life, so I can't complain.
Well, if you're doing music for a living, it is a good life. I mean, you can't complain. I mean, you can, but who's going to really listen to you if you're doing music for a living? You know, it's a
Like I
gift.
said, it's working.
Pretty
It does.
blessed, I think. Yeah.
Right. It's a hard gig, and I started the show during COVID to support artists, like a lot of people, would, you know, to really kind of not do the soup to nuts history. VH1 thing is more about check out the artists, support the artists. I went to school for music and stuff. I have a history of music in my background, so I know how hard it is for you guys. So I'm kind of waving the flag that it's awesome for an hour on stage or 2 hours, but there's a lot going on. You guys get screwed over musically and financially. And unfortunately, that's kind of the conversation we're going to start the show off with, but we're also going to end on a musical note with you guys. So for people that are watching, I don't usually get involved in much back and forth, but this is not really a back and forth situation. A couple weeks ago, I had on Graham Bonnet, and during the show, some things were said that the rest of the band, Alcatraz, obviously two separate bands right now, felt it was unfair and not true. So in all fairness, the manager reached out and wanted me to have you guys on to talk. And I've actually listened to your album since then. I've enjoyed it, music as well. So I thought we'll make it a two for one. You guys can share how you're feeling and how you feel you're misrepresented. And you guys can kind of put it out there, your side, and they'll talk about your music too. So gentlemen, you want to start?
Well,
You want to even talk on the subject too? I'm sorry. Actually talk about the where it came from, the whole thing, because I don't want to, I'm gonna try to step aside of this one.
Okay.
Please, the floor is yours.
Well, you know, Graham left the band, and everybody knows that. There's nothing that I'm going to say that's news to anybody. But basically, you know, it started back then of saying unflattering remarks about myself and the band, and I've just gotten to the point where I feel like I have the right to speak up and say something back. And I don't really want to get into all of this. You know, I would much rather just play music and write music and not worry about it and
right.
let Graham do Graham's thing and we do our thing. Hey, but it's come to the point where I feel I have to say something and I have to tell the reality of what we did to get it to a certain point. So the fact that, like, one major thing was, it seems to be, is that, well, Graham sang to tracks, has been singing to tracks for years, and not singing, but lip syncing to tracks for years. And I'm the one that programmed all that. And I have the session that we use live right here. I can play it for you to show you. But the point is, we did it as a band. We did it to support Graham and so we could work.
Mm-hmm.
And Graham just didn't have now, whether he didn't wasn't into it or didn't want to sing, I don't know, but he couldn't. We had about 18 or 20 songs in a set. Graham could not do that. He would do maybe on a good night, he might do four songs, you know, something like that. On a bad night, maybe one or two. And the way that worked is, I went in the studio with Graham and we recorded vocals for, I would build a temporary track for him to sing to, like take Island
track,
in the Sun,
right?
for instance.
Yeah.
I would build a scratch track and the drummer and I would, and Graham would come up with a tempo that would feel good live. I would build a scratch track to a click and then Graham would sing the song in the studio. It might take 3 or 4 days because his voice wasn't in good shape, but eventually we'd get a decent vocal track. And then that has a click on it. And you being a musician, you know what I'm talking about. So, so the drummer live, we split that off out of the computer. Graham's vocals would come out of one side and the click would come out of the other. And Giles Labrie, our manager, he's a musician and he knew Graham's voice probably better than anybody. So Giles would be at the house console One fader would be Graham live, Graham's live mic, and the other fader would be the tracks. So Giles would very carefully watch Graham, and when Graham had to talk, Giles would bring that fader up so Graham could talk on the mic, and then he would turn it down so that you just hear the back, you know, the recorded vocals. So we did that since the date I have on these files is 2017. So wow. We've been doing that for a while. And I didn't have a problem with it. Is for me personally, the one that running the computer and have to be responsible for that, very stressful, extremely stressful. And it, very shortly, it got to be where it was no fun at all. And that was nothing personal about Graham. It was just like, I didn't know what I was getting. It was uncharted territory for me doing this sort of thing. So I'm used to being in a band where you just play 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well,
and you...
aside of that, I'm sorry. This is this is actually more of a question that's going on. That is just a dangerous thing as a band to do, especially with tracks and everything else. And you hit the Milli Vanilli. And that poor guy that passed away. I mean, any other guy could sing. Like, it's just such a nightmare for people and it bands. And nowadays it's worse. I mean, you're really destroying your career when you do that. You know, especially in a way where you're not balancing or owning up to it, because people want an honest show. And I think in rock and roll, the group of rock or metal, what are you going to call it, the genres? We are a loose group of people where I think a lot of forgiveness, and it's very inclusive, I think, of most music
yes.
groups, right? So
absolutely.
I think when you do something that's a little less honest, like if it's pop music, or it's I'm not gonna dog Britney Spears, but if it's a pop artist and they have other tracks, you know, they sang at one point it's an entertainment show. When
absolutely.
You go to a rock show, it feels like if I think people, I'm speaking for me and people I know, it feels a little bit dishonest, almost like I'd rather hear you blow the notes. And I'm not talking about Graham. I'm just saying in general, I think I'd rather hear real vocals. I'd rather hear raspy. I don't care if it's the end of your tour. I want you to do your best.
Well, we've all seen bands over the years, our favorite bands. I've seen The Who, Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin was, it was not good. Sure. But I loved it. I loved
exactly.
It because they were in my face playing. I'm watching Jimmy Page from 25 feet away, you know, and mm-hmm. Robert. So I don't think it matters that you're perfect live. Like you said, it's all about the performance and the audience being part of that.
Yeah.
So, but we did the tracks thing because that's the only way we could go forward.
I get that. You still have to work though. And that's the other problem that we're discussing today, is at a certain point in life as an artist, like, what are you going to do? You're going to go to a store and change your career or start doing something different. This is your job. This is your career. And it's like, you know, life isn't perfect. You know, you don't have insurance. You know, you got to work.
Exactly,
and that's what it comes down to.
We were all behind that. No problem. There was no bad vibe about that. It was a little tricky in the beginning, certainly figuring out the way of doing that. But Graham was amazing at lip syncing. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. As long as he was on the click. You know, that's unfortunate that the click rules the whole thing. The drummer was about 99%. Mark, amazing at playing to a click. So it was very tricky.
A click can be hard too. I'm going to be honest with you. Click, when you're sitting alone, a click is hard. But when you got a live thing and you put like a band of people involved in it, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
It literally is like the LA traffic. It's just a nightmare from beginning to end.
To be where Mark is the only one, the drummer hears the click. Graham doesn't. I don't hear it. Joe didn't hear it. The bass player didn't hear it. So you're just, I mean, I know it's running because I programmed the whole thing. And unfortunately, I do this stuff. And I'm like thinking every minute, I'm thinking, oh my God, the click. What if it does it? What if it does? And some nights we would get off the click, whether it's the drummer get off or Graham would get off. And Mark would just shut the computer off. And we would have to finish the night with whatever Graham could get through, you know, and do the vocal. But in general, so we did that for years. And I wouldn't talk about this if Graham wasn't saying such unflattering things about the band and about myself. I would have no reason, but you know, all's fair. He has no business saying those things, and they're not true. I'm telling nothing but the truth. I'm not lying. I'm not, I have I don't hate anybody. So I have no big axe to grind. I'm just not gonna talk trash about people. That's not what this is about. But it certainly, I'm telling the
You're
truth.
Frustrated. Well, you can share the part that brought me into this, because I was, look, I'm a fan. Mom and dad can get divorced and I can like mom and dad and see each other, enjoy the music of Graham, and I can enjoy the music of you guys now. And I you know what I mean? And most fans will. But, you know, if someone's saying something, you need to say your things. And I think what we started this discussion was what was said on my show. So maybe you want to start with that. You want to share that part and talk about your what was said and kind of defend yourself in a way?
A big thing is the songwriting. Graham claiming to have written everything, which is totally incorrect. The first album I did with him in the Graham Bonnet Band, I co-wrote a couple of things on there. I came into the band after they had already started the record. But the producer, guitar player, had written the bulk of that music. And Graham started taking credit for that. I heard him say things and I felt bad for the guitar player, producer who wrote the stuff, very talented guy. And I felt bad for him and he was upset about it. So I kind of, that's where it all started. And then the next album, nothing was said, but now, you know, Graham, well, for several years now, Graham has been saying he wrote everything and he did everything and he did not. And one way that you really know that is Graham follows the guitar player, because the guitar players have always been the main writers in our band, because that's the kind of band it is. Yngwie, Steve Vai, you know, and Joe is the main writer here. And that's where a lot of the direction and the feel comes from. So for Graham, a lot of Graham's ideas, he would come in and play an idea, and a couple of his ideas were pretty cool. And we try to make them work, and a few of them turned out pretty good, but some of them would be like in the Buddy Holly vibe, you know, old rock and roll, because Red loves that stuff and he loves the Beach Boys, which I do too, but some of that that's not going to work for a metal band, right? And we needed to be here, because the one thing Alcatraz got busted for years was we're on the fence. We were never really heavy. We weren't a pop band. And promoters and fans would say, we never know what we're going to get. And because Graham fought the heavy metal thing, he does not like, or didn't used to like, heavy metal. And again, I'm just telling the truth. This is what Graham said to me, said in interviews, and he wrote a song about it on Born Innocent. So I'm not lying. I'm only telling the truth here. So, so we just wanted to be heavier. I've always liked heavier music. And so when we would get stuck in that thing between the two, that was no good for me. And I love ABBA. I like all kinds. I love Karen Carpenter. I love the Carpenters.
As I do. Bee Gees to Slayer. I love it all. Yeah. So
I want to be in that band, but playing live, I grew up on The Who, and Black Sabbath and Blue Cheer and Cream and, you know, whatever, in the early days. And that's where my roots were, even as a keyboard player. I mean, I used to play guitar, so I kind of got into it and blah, blah, blah. So that's what I wanted to do. And Graham didn't want to do that. It just got worse and worse, where he fought it and fought it and fought it. And you know what? That's okay. He doesn't want to do that. I want to do that. Excuse me. You go do your own thing. That's all. And for him to say things like he wrote all the songs and talk down about me as a musician and keyboard player. I was Graham's friend we've always been friends and I've always helped him. I may not be happy with his song direction. I may not be happy with a lot of some things that he would do or some things that would happen live that were really not good. But yeah. Always supported him, and I don't hate Graham. That's the weird thing, you know. It's not about that. So,
It sounds like you guys are hurt more. I mean, because like if you have a friendship, a creative friendship / business, first off, it's like a marriage. So it's a nightmare to try to get all your emotions. But it doesn't sound like you're just, you know, spewing out anger. I mean, it sounds like it really just hurt and disappointed.
Well, you know, and there's business things going on, and I understand that would piss somebody off, and people get pissed off about, you know, an opposition about a business thing that they feel is not right. So I get that, but I have never, since all that stuff started, the worst I've ever said about Graham in an interview is that I didn't understand what he's doing because he doesn't like heavy metal. That's all I've ever said about Graham. I've never told anything about running the tracks or anything. And there's a lot more I could tell, and there's no reason to. Most people know these days anyway. You know, there's enough out there, has been out there for years, about a lot of the antics that have gone on the road with Graham, that I don't need to talk about all that. But running the track, certainly for years, like you said, it should be a live band, good, bad, or otherwise. You make mistakes some night if things aren't go well, but that's what rock and roll is. So the fact that, and again, the fact that he says he wrote,
I'm surprised because I was talking about how strong his voice was, and seeing videos, and I guess he is good at lip sync or whatever. I'm not, if that's what's going on, because, and hearing the newer albums, it sounds strong. And to me, this is the age where vocals are changing in everybody. It's worth acknowledging if your voice is still super strong. Or I've talked to Don Dokken about his voice not being strong anymore, and we've acknowledged that he enjoys singing, so he sings. Not everyone likes it, but he doesn't care. He says, don't go to the show. He has a stance on it.
And he can get it done in the studio.
Right.
He gets it done in the studio. It's a lot of work. When I worked with Graham, I can't speak for Graham on his last record or his record since. The records that I've recorded, Graham as the producer, it was difficult. And Graham wasn't being difficult. It was just his lifestyle and his voice not being in good shape. Some days we'd come in to record, we might get two lines of a verse, and we'd sing that nine times, and I'd have to comp those together, if you know what I mean. You compile pieces.
It's very, very few people can really knock it out, though. Yeah. It's hard.
Very, very tedious. So, because he was struggling, and I got that, and I was sympathetic to that, and I was, as a producer, I was like, okay, so you don't tell an artist, you don't yell at him and tell him, oh, that's bad, you suck, and you know. So I would say, hey, man, well, isn't there any way we could do this or do that? And today, at least get some work done. No, I can't. I didn't sleep last night. I don't feel good. And okay, fair enough. Let's try it again tomorrow. So it might take weeks to do a vocal that would take a normal vocalist 2 days.
Is this the last record we did? Yeah, I'm sorry. How long is it? What's the timeline we're talking about for this? Because obviously, at some point, he was knocking out. Like, when did this happen?
Well, Born Innocent struggled. Okay. The Grand Bond, and he struggled. Yes, he struggled. And you know what? At his age, that's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, it's reality. You know, these things happen. You get older, and it's especially for a singer, that's a whole different instrument than a guitar player or keyboard player or whatever. So I get that. But when he starts talking about songwriting and negative stuff about me, that's when I felt the need. I'm going to speak out. I'm not going to sit here and take that forever. So that's why I'm doing this. And especially later on, you know, after Joe got in the band, had a really good thing. Joe's a very prolific songwriter, and it was real natural. It was like he'd come up with a riff and you go, yeah, that's cool. And Graham would fight it. You know, and you can't fight it. It's good. If it's good, it's good. Why are you? But he just didn't like this kind of music. So apparently he's changed, or he's trying something different. I don't know. I can't say. But I know during that period, I was thrilled to get Joe in the band because I could see the direction going more for what I like to play and what I want to hear, which was a lot closer to the first album, No Parole from Rock and Roll. I love that record. I love that direction. And we were back kind of in that ballpark again, only a modern version of it. And Graham wasn't on board with that at all. He fought that and was not very complimentary of the songwriting or the, anything about what we were doing. You know, so it was obvious that this was going south. So that's when he, you know, left. But I mean, you know, it's weird. Graham says bad things about me, but Graham's bass player, and as the producer of the Graham Bonnet record and then two Alcatraz records, the bass player didn't play on any of those records. So Graham's slagging me off about my musicianship and whatever. Mm-hmm. And she did not play on those records. I recorded her and I tried my best. The producer before me on the last Graham Bonnet record before me said he played bass on all the songs. That he tried, couldn't get a good bass track, and he played bass. So I found that, and he said, you'll see. And I tried. I tried to record her, and it was a problem. So it's just people live in glass houses shouldn't throw rocks. You know what I'm saying? You should keep your business to yourself. I'll keep my business to myself, and everybody go do their thing. And unpleasant business things that are happening, trademark stuff and all that, that is what it is. But you don't need to go tell thing, you know, you don't need to do that. You don't need to say bad things about people that were always in the corner for you. You know, you can't, never did anything but try to help that guy. Get back to the song.
Yeah, please. Yeah, that was my question about the songwriting. Because at one point in the interview, when she's Beth, and for people that aren't aware, Beth is his wife now, I believe, and she plays bass in his band now. And
yes.
She manages the band also, I believe. Yes. I might be. I believe that's what it is. So that's what you're referring to. And she was in Alcatraz for a short bit of time, is what you're referring to, that people aren't up to the history of what's going on. Because it gets a little bit confusing when bands have the names and they switch around who's in what lineup. Because, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised to hear your riffs there, Joe, in this new album. Because sometimes Alcatraz has been kind of poppy, and I've always never known where I feel about it because what kind of mood I'm in. This album, this newer album, is really heavy, and I really like that. So
yeah, well
that's a little change.
Yeah, I mean to you know, kind of put it all together, like the direction of Alcatraz. I mean, Bethany kind of painted, you know, like Graham is like the leader of the band, and you know, and he wrote everything, and you know, the rest of the musicians were just there to serve his vision and everything and all that, and it wasn't like that at all. And the musical direction of Alcatraz has always been dictated by whomever plays guitar. You know, first record, obviously, the legendary Yngwie Malmsteen. Second record, Disturbing the Peace, you know, Steve Stamp is all over that. No offense to Danny Johnson, but Dangerous Games, no one really heard that record or listened to it. I had never heard it. We had to play the actual tune Dangerous Games back in 2022 because a German promoter wanted to hear it. So when I'm trying to learn it for rehearsal, that's the first time I actually heard any song off that record, you know. And then when they relaunched the band back in 2019, and they got me to play guitar, they wanted, you know, obviously some of the Yngwie and Blackmore, you know, the Rainbow and Rising Force overtones to the thing, but they wanted to be meaner and heavier. That way, you know, not just fans of Rainbow and you know, Yngwie and Michael Schenker would like Alcatraz, but also if you like Priest or Accept or Saxon, right, or Maiden or whatever. So you know, turn it more into like a still with those Dio Rainbow kind of overtones, but more of a fierce metal act, and that's what we've achieved, you know. And on Born and on the last two records, Take No Prisoners and Five, I wrote the bulk of the stuff, And you know, Jimmy writes stuff, and it's like your typical singer guitar player kind of arrangement where, you know, I mean, when I write a tune, I don't just write a riff. I mean, I have the whole thing laid out. You know, I'll write like the riff, this is the verse, this is the pre-chorus, the solo, you know, the whole arrangement's pretty together. And Doogie writes the lyrics and the melody lines, and or like me and Jimmy will write together. Jimmy will have like maybe two-thirds of a track and say, hey, I need a verse, or I need a chorus, or hey, you know, so we've done stuff like that. And then with Born Innocent, what happened was, this is before I was in the band, so that what they were doing is that they decided to get all these different guitar players that used to play with Graham at one time. And you know, it was almost like this little biological, like, this is your, you know, so get these guys that had worked with Graham previously, and everyone's going to contribute a track. And this is before I was involved. So they got, so you know, Steve contributed a track that's Dirty Like the City on Born Innocent. And the late Bob Kulick, rest in peace, Bob, contributed two tracks to that.
I didn't know
Yeah, and
that.
then,
That's cool.
And I played on them, and Chris Impellitteri, who worked with Graham, and I'm a big fan of Chris's, great guitar player,
Oh, Chris is
and he,
great.
you know, he, yeah, Chris, good, you know, wonderfully nice dude as well. Chris wrote a track, and then I wrote, and then I wrote Polar Bear, and I also wrote London 1666. In fact, London 1666, I think Graham was having a hard time coming up with something for that because it was a heavier thing. So Giles actually wrote I think he wrote the
Yeah,
lyrics and the
Giles
melody
wrote the
lines.
lyrics and melody of that, because that's what I was saying before. Graham kind of shut down and just didn't want anything to do with it for whatever reasons. I'm not totally sure, but he just sort of shut down on us and just said, he didn't like the music and he didn't think it was very good, and he wasn't gonna. At one point, he just said, "I'm not seeing any more of this stuff," and we were three songs away from being done.
Which
It
album was
got a
that?
little tense there.
So that was what year?
Well, that was the Born Innocent record. You know, you know, which came, which was well, the, we recorded that like 2019, I want to say.
I try to understand the timeline myself, because there's a lot going on here in my brain.
One thing that's a little, you see, the whole thing is kind of like, just to kind of give you a bit of the timeline before I got involved. You know, Graham, Jimmy, Mark that played on Born Innocent, and Giles Lavery, and you know, Beth and me were all in the Graham Bonnet together, band together for several years. You know, so they did have this dynamic. You know, all of them together. You know, because they had, and so I came into it. And they when they decided to kind of relaunch Alcatraz. And so there was already that dynamic between all those people. So, you know, whatever, you know, people work together for a lengthy period of time, there's always going to be rifts and stuff. So I was kind of removed from that. But, you know, apparently, like, some of the things had been, you know, coming to a head for like a bit of time, you know. As far as a rift between, like, let's say, you know, Jimmy and the band's manager Giles, and you know, and Bethany and stuff like that.
It felt like
And a
in the
lot of the
interview
stuff,
there was
like I
that
was
was quite
saying,
an interesting. I'm sorry, that felt like in the interview that the management and Bethany, that felt like there was an issue there. That was the feeling I
and it's
got.
funny because
I don't know. I mean, you
we
were in the
used to have a
interview.
real.
I didn't edit it. I didn't edit the interview. So, I mean, that's exactly as it was. So.
It's weird because, and I don't hate Bethany. This is all rock and roll music. I mean, because I choose not to play with her or something, I don't hate her. It's just kind of weird. We used to have a really good time. For a lot of reasons, things just started going south. And a lot of that stuff was stuff that just happens in bands, and you usually work it out. And you couldn't work things out. I tried to be honest or reasonable with people, and they didn't want to hear it. So it just deteriorated to the point where I got to the point where I knew I didn't want to continue with that feeling anymore. I didn't want anything to do with being in a band with that kind of tension and those problems. I'm not saying I'm perfect or did everything right, but I was like, okay, this is deteriorating. This is not good anymore. I don't want to be with that anymore. And fair. That was just me personally. That's before it even fell apart further and Graham left and to do his thing with Bethany, and that's fine. You know, we just had a different vision about what it should be. And like Joe said, it got heavier. It was much heavier. And I was thrilled, and I am. It's great. The direction of it is just, it's exactly what I had wanted from the beginning, was to just stay in that direction and keep, it's a modern version of No Parole from Rock and Roll. And that's what I wanted.
Yeah, I encourage you to check it out. I mean, I enjoyed the as I said before, the solo albums and what Graham was doing recently. It's a lot heavier, actually. And I had a great talk with Graham. I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed, you know, Bethany. She seemed very sweet and kind to me. So I don't, like I said, but you guys are just as welcoming. So it's a shame that the dynamics of both of you are at this point, but there's a lot been said. What's odd is, so from the outside, when this happened, it felt like at first it was just going to be a split, and Graham was going to do his version of Alcatraz, and you guys were going to do yours. It's kind of the feeling I got on the outside, but I was not looking in so deeply, I'll be honest with you, especially because I hadn't heard some of the heavier music, so it's kind of a nice surprise in all this stuff going on to hear that you guys are much heavier. But that being said, is that kind of how it started, and then the riff just got deep all of a sudden? Like, what happened?
He wasn't saying, oh, I'm going to do my own, and you guys do yours, and I'm going to do that. The riff got started. It was a combination of Bethany. We didn't get that. She was not getting along. We didn't get along anymore. And that put pressure on Graham, because Graham has to, you know, you don't tell your girlfriend, hey, you're wrong, these guys are right. So the whole thing just kind of flew apart, and started there. And that's when Graham decided that he wanted to go do something else. I like I said, all he's ever said to me was he didn't like this kind of music. And I really didn't want to have, of all people, to have a singer in a band that doesn't like the direction.
Right.
That's no good. You know, that's never going to work. So that's going to be some weird, that's not good. So, and that's fine. Graham, go do your thing. You know, that's okay. I don't pay much attention to what Graham does or anything, you know. And if he wouldn't say stuff like this, I wouldn't be on here right now talking to you, talking about the tracks and about her. But, you know, I have to tell the truth. And that's just nothing but the truth. I'm not talking trash about anybody. I don't hate anybody or anything like that. So that's just the facts. Okay. And, you know.
I guess the last question she had, I mean, I think you covered a lot, I think, is with the name Battle, which, if I could say something first, is we've seen a lot of bands go through this, and to go legally into court with it, no one ever wins financially except for the lawyers.
Right. That's right.
And it almost feels like if you could, not just you, I'm not speaking, I don't speak out of turn. If you and Graham or any other band says, look, our band Alcatraz has a name value, has a marquee value. That's what they want. It doesn't almost sometimes even matter who's in the band. When you put out a club, fans are going to go, oh, Alcatraz, I know that song from whatever. Fans aren't always so deep. That is the value of the band. It doesn't matter if you have all the original members and you don't have that name, they're going to be like, well, why don't you call it this name? Or the clubs will name it anyhow when they're not supposed to. So that's what the battle is always about. It's only better if you guys do split and you guys are fighting over it, is to just find a way to either share the name, find a different version of the name, whether it be Graham Bonnet's Alcatraz and you guys are just Alcatraz, or Graham Bonnet's has an album called Alcatraz. Like, if there's a way to find the middle, like LA Guns did with Riley's Guns, because it's still identifiable. You know, you still can identify it, but it costs a lot of money to for them to come down to that, and it's a shame in this economy with bands to waste all your money fighting over a name that you spent your whole life building. All of you guys did.
It's ridiculous, because in the beginning of this whole trademark thing, you know, even their attorney in the beginning passed along some not very nice comments about myself and the manager and stuff. And it started off kind of nasty. And we approached the attorney about, like, well, let's talk. Let's get together and talk. Nobody would do that. And I must be naive. I always think you can talk about this stuff, but people, you know, you should be able to sit down and go, yeah, like, whatever, get over that. Let's talk, you know, and let's just hash it out. And maybe we don't hash it out. Maybe it's just you run into a brick wall and that's, sorry, we tried. But we thought it'd be better to try. But that's not the way it got. The whole lawsuit thing got started was nobody wanted to talk. And I blame the lawyers, and not our lawyer, because our lawyer passed that information along. Maybe we should discuss this and see what we can work out. And that was not to be. So,
is there a way to share the name? Was that the original idea? Some way of sharing it? I don't know if you could say legally. I don't want to get into that part. But is there a way to kind of, were you trying to meet in the middle type of deal?
Well, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I just wanted to get together, and I thought, let's just talk about what the possibilities are and what the realities are, you know, of what it's worth, et cetera, et cetera. And that just coming from their end, from their attorney, said some not very flattering things about us and passed along some information that let me know that, like, oh, I see this is going south. This is not going to be a, you know, sensible thing where we can sit down and talk about it. So
that's a shame.
So, yeah.
No one's going to win. Even if you win or he wins, the lawyers are going to make the most money. And it sucks because, it just sucks.
Yeah, it's fucked.
Yeah, it's always a shame because, I think bands can share names. I mean, we've all gotten used to that now. Enough bands have shared names and other versions of stuff out there that two versions of something can exist. And especially if the band supported each other, both versions, it'd be kind of healthy. And it would actually probably work really well with promoters because they wouldn't feel like they had to take sides or they were crossing lines or whatever. They would be like, I've got twice the bands now. I can have twice the audience coming in. If I have people, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's twice the draw. Like, if you look at it from a marketing thing, it could be better.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not much of a marketing person.
I just hear that. It's crazy. I mean, but it's a shame it went that way. I do want to take a couple minutes. I do want to talk about. So when Graham left, though, vocals changed and you've done some albums and you've got a great album now and you're on this really cool tour. Let's kind of talk about the newest album and the tour to kind of end this on a high note and talk about like where you guys are now, if who you are.
Right. Well, since Doogie got in the band, it's gone really well. I mean, Doogie's a great writer and comes up with ideas quick, and the direction stayed solid. You know, Joe would write something and Doogie would, that was just perfect for Doogie. I mean, it was right in his wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. So there was no discussion. I mean, it was really, and like Joe said, when he writes a song, it's complete arrangement. So there was not a lot of, you know, going back and forth about, well, I don't know, what do you think's the verse? And I see this a lot in bands. I produce a lot of bands that are fighting with each other about, oh, what's the verse? I think that's a better chorus. We don't have that problem. Joe, myself, Joe, Giles, whoever. When Joe writes something, for instance, like you said, it's kind of done. It's like, you know what part is what part. And Doogie just picks right up. So that's very easy. And both these records have been easy. I went to Scotland to record the last vocals of Doogie's. He did the whole album in 4 days. And you can only sing so many hours a day. So he did a fantastic job. He just killed it, you know. So
What made you guys go to him? Because yeah, I mean, he's got the same lineage of the Rainbow and the Ritchie Blackmore. Like, it's all in the same family. Like, what he's been performing with anyhow. It makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Doogie checks all the boxes. It's like, played with Ritchie Blackmore? Yep. Played with Iggy?
Right.
Yep. Played with Michael Schenker? Check. You know, so
he's got the LinkedIn look. I mean, that's it for you guys. So, but what made you guys pull him in? Like, was there a list of, like, who you wanted to come in? Well, Graham's gone. We need to have somebody who's going to have Philly's shoes because, you know, there is a name with this band and he was known with it. We can't just, you know, we have to have something coming in substantial.
And to be honest, when Graham was in the band, we sold X amount of tickets on our tours. And our tours were mainly in Europe or the UK or Scandinavia. And I think the best night we ever had was maybe 300 people. And that was a good night in a 1,000-seat club or a 1,500-seat club. Like, we played in Spain and they had to cut the rooms in half. They drew a curtain because we can't fill that whole room. And, you know, that was with Graham. Mm-hmm. Got Doogie in the, and it's pretty much the same thing. It's not like, you know, now we're selling twice the amount of tickets. So sort of goes back to what you're saying before. There's not a lot of money. We're not talking about these huge amounts right. of money, you know, right now anyway. I'd like to think there will be in the future. But so Graham
with the
was.
The sound of this album, though, you could do it. I'm trying to be simple with you. I mean, with the sound of this album now, you start playing the European festivals, there might be a newer audience that you're going to be like, oh, this isn't my mom and dad's Alcatraz. And I'm not making a dig towards it. It's just a different sound. It's like, well, it's Alcatraz, but we're going to throw some other flavors into it now. And we're going to kind of turn it up a little bit more. Instead of slowing down as we get older, we can actually speed it up a little bit. And with the metal market, you might kind of pull in some more people. And then with Doogie, it's, you know.
Well, and that's what I think is the direction on this, on Take No Prisoners, is really close to what we're all about. And Joe and I and Giles, which put the music together, and Doogie, lyrically and melodically, it all gelled. You know, it was all right. And yeah, I'd like to think that it's we attracting new fans and playing live, doing these songs off this new record. I've seen people, you know, a lot younger, you know, singing the lyrics and come up to me and say, man, I love this new stuff. Some of these people had never heard of Alcatraz, didn't know who we were, which is kind of weird, you know, and they'd come up to me and say, man, I didn't know who you guys were, but you're great. I love that song, blah, 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 you know, whatever. I want to go get your record. And that's just good, honest, street level rock and roll. I love it. I want to get it. I don't care who you are, where you came from, or who your last singer was, or whatever. And that's great. I love that. And a lot of people that kind of knew who we were, but didn't really know anything about the band, but knew who, you know, knew the name and came to the club to see, well, let's see what these guys are all about. Really liked it. And we had no touring. We, not one person that I know of ever said anything to me about, well, where's Graham? And that's not a dig at Graham. That's just the reality of rock and roll. People, some bands change singers, change whoever, the star in the band, and they move on and they keep going. And I mean,
it's very common nowadays. So, I mean,
it's really like Rainbow. I'm a big fan of Rainbow, and obviously Joe is, and we do some Rainbow because Graham was in Rainbow, and then we did some of that stuff, and then we're doing stuff off the record that Doogie did in Rainbow, and Ritchie Blackmore never had a problem changing singers. You know, things just happened, and it wasn't always Ritchie firing somebody. It was just,
I think Ritchie didn't have a problem. I think Ritchie just kept changing them.
I think Ritchie just felt like, which I agree, it wasn't the most important thing in the world. The singer, it's going to be the vibe of the band, Ritchie's direction. Because Ritchie, love him, hate him, whatever, that guy, he's been the same since Deep Purple. He's never changed. He's had some commercial songs that maybe he wouldn't have done in the beginning or whatever with Joe Lynn Turner, but they were great songs. And it was still Rainbow. So Joe Lynn Turner, Doogie, Graham, Ronnie Romero, go down the list. You know, it doesn't really matter. And I'd like to think the same of us. We have a direction, and it sounds like Alcatraz. And you can mix and match singers in there, and it wouldn't, you know, it's not going to be a disaster. It's not going to be the end of the world if the songs are still strong and all that. I just like playing in a band where everybody's having a good time and enjoys working with each other.
Yeah.
Like I said, playing to tracks was miserable. That to me was torture. I would go on stage, and we were in Japan, and it was about 1,000-seater. You know, Graham does well in Japan, so we it was going to be over a 2-hour show. And I was set up at soundcheck, and we had some people, some of the Japanese were there, meet and greet kind of thing at the soundcheck. So there's probably 50 fans out there just thrilled to be there watching us do a soundcheck. The drummer looks at me about 10 minutes left to do in the soundcheck. The drummer looks at me and goes, "The tracks aren't working. The computer's not working." So I had to run across this 100-foot stage to the drums, get up on the drum riser, and program the computer and make sure it was right. It was just a simple thing, but I had to fix it. And that to me is just, that's torture, you know, for me.
That's not rock and roll. That's not rock and roll. There shouldn't be a laptop on the stage.
No.
Unless it's opening music or something, some kind of opera. Or I'm okay with background. You can't reproduce background vocals when you're running around a stage. I'm okay with background vocals. I want my lead vocals, and I'd like to hear somebody sing off key, or it'd be the drummer, the guitarist, bass player, whatever. I'm okay with that, but you can fill it out.
It could be great. A person could be not singing well, but if they got the energy and the vibe and the band's kicking ass, it's okay. That's what it is that night, you know. Alcatraz in the old days, we had some really good nights, and Graham didn't sing well. It wasn't that he's just killing it, but as a band, we were really good. A lot of energy. Yngwie had a lot of energy live. The guy couldn't hold still. It was great. He played with a lot of fire and a lot of conviction, and just was going after it every minute. And the whole band was. That was infectious. You know, so we had some good nights, even though Graham wasn't singing well, or maybe that was our best night playing. But yeah, there were no tracks.
To me, it feels like you guys are almost a different band. Your sound is heavier. You sound like almost like, you know, and that's just as a fan of music and hearing you guys, honestly, and hearing the music and knowing, because before I wasn't a huge Alcatraz fan. I was of the songs and comes the first two albums, but I never knew where to put you guys, honestly. The same problem you guys, everyone else. I didn't know like what kind of mood I was in for you guys, because you weren't heavy and poppy. I didn't know. I liked all the guitar players. I've had you know, Chris on. I mean, I'm a C5 fan, like, you know, like, so like, it's not about that. I obviously talked to Graham and talking to you guys, but it's the overall sound still had its weird pop. This feels like a different band. And when you're saying like Ritchie Blackmore, his band was always Ritchie Blackmore. Like Alcatraz was known as all of you guys. And so that's kind of the difference. Like he's always been with the band, whereas Ritchie's always had different singers and he's always been his own entity. But that doesn't take away from the fact it still feels like a brand new band to me on some level that has the legacy of the musicians from Alcatraz going to do some of the old songs, but we've got something else going on. And you're on tour now with Raven, right?
Raven and Girl School,
right?
And
I don't know who else.
There's a on the bill in England, and I'm sorry, their name escapes me now.
But Raven's a good band for you to be on tour with, though. That's a good crowd, though. The guitar playing feels like it's a new audience for you, because maybe you played with them, but I'm saying, but those kind of bands. That kind of guitar work.
Yes.
If they're coming to see Raven and they're also going to say, "Oh, we're going to see Alcatraz," well, whatever, have a beer or whatever. And they're like, "Oh," and that's the best compliment a band can get. Oh, you know, Joe's just riffing off on the stuff. They're like, "I wasn't expecting this. This isn't the same, you know."
Right.
That's the best thing ever for us.
And I love good guitar playing. I always have. I mean, I grew up on it. I mean, Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, those were my gods, you know, and I played guitar back then, and I had no intent of being that kind of guitar player, because I was playing keyboards and guitar, but I've always loved good guitar playing. I don't know, and so I've gravitated towards that. So when we auditioned guitar players in the beginning for Alcatraz, when Yngwie came in, I was like, yeah, this guy's badass. and a lot of energy and a lot of fire, a little loose around the edges back then at 18 years old, you know, but he was just great. And I love that kind of playing. And he had a smile on his face. He was like into it, man. Let's tear this to pieces, you know? And I love that. Always have. And
that Steve was his mindset. Yes. Oh yeah. Both of them. Both. If you know anything about, I mean, obviously you played with them. You know, I read the books by them and talked years. I mean, they were engulfed by the guitar and those musicians that you've loved yourself. They embodied them for their whole all day long, 24 hours a day. So by the time you got these young raw musicians, they were just exploding.
You know, Steve came in and we auditioned, you call it an audition with Steve. And I don't remember how many songs we played, but he played the same way as Yngwie did. He had that fire and just reckless abandon. He didn't care. He's ripping the strings off the guitar. He didn't care if it was perfect. And I said, you don't need to play Yngwie solos perfect. And he says, yeah, well, I can't. And he can. It's not, you know, he can play that stuff, but he chose not to. He a little different. And, but I just loved it because it was a lot of energy and a lot of that attitude. It's got to have attitude. I don't like guitar players that are, everything's absolutely note for note perfect. It might as well be a sequencer in a computer, you know, at that point.
So well, play with it feels like you guys are picking up right now with Joe, like that, those first couple albums, the energy, it feels like these, where you guys are now recently, is like where it should have been. You know what I'm saying? This is the connecting bridge. That energy you guys are picking up again with that guitar work again.
Joe and I cut guitars and it takes, there are no takes. We just put it in record and go. And then if something happens halfway through the song, you know, oh, let's punch in there. And that's about it. We maybe one, two punches at the most. And that rhythm track's done in 20 minutes. And then we go to the next rhythm track. And the solo is the same thing. I've punched the solos. And we'll get to a point, play a solo, he just plays it top to bottom. And then he goes back and he listens, he goes, you know, that one little part, maybe I'd like to, let's see if we can, I'll try to punch that. So we punch that in. Sometimes it goes, nah, let's just leave it. So that's the way I like to work. I think that's great. Just knock it out, you know.
Well, it's exciting. I mean, I think, you know, it's exciting that you guys are alive. It is, you know, I'm glad to, you know, I'm sorry. The circumstances to have this discussion. I mean, the reason why the manager worked out, but it's exciting for me to have heard the album because I'll be honest with you, this is not the Alcatraz I thought I was going to be listening to when I had the album sent over to me to check out. I'll be honest with you. And I was like, oh, which is good because I'm pleasantly surprised that it rocks out harder. I think it's going to suck. I mean, everyone's well-established musicians. I mean, it wasn't about that. It was like, there's so much music. You've really got to kind of feel it for me. You know, are you going to be able to move ahead? And am I going to be like, oh, this is nice. This is something I listen to now.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that very much. Yeah, like I said, this is easy for me because, you know, doing this interview because I'm only telling the truth. I'm not talking trash. I can't stand talking trash about people. If some of this stuff is hurtful, that's too bad. Like I said, people in glass houses shouldn't throw rocks. So, but I'm only telling the truth. I just want to make that very, very clear.
it's good. I mean,
the songwriting thing
is not fair. I mean, it's not, you know, I'll let this part where we step over to the, please. The songwriting part isn't fair if you're not being credited for something and you don't get a chance to express it. Because why we're doing this is because once something goes out in print and media, we may have this interview and then an outlet may pick up a headline. And that one line. Yeah. And they will hear, Graham wrote all the music or so-and-so wrote all the music of anything. I'm not talking about, once again, about Graham. That's it. Everybody else in that line, somebody's going to read that line. It's like being at the supermarket. The headlines, and it's never been fair for any artist to get that. So that's why it's important for this discussion to not start a flame war, but it's about you having a chance to say, this isn't a headline that's fair for me. You know, nothing worse than being accused of something and not being able to defend yourself.
You exactly.
And I think you clearly showed where you're at with this and how you feel and what your involvement was. I guess I have one last question is, You guys are playing England. Are you guys coming to the US for shows this tour? What's the deal?
Sorry, I missed that.
US
We what?
tour, you any US dates? Because I mean, it looks like a lot of this stuff is in England or in Europe. Are we doing
If you
US?
go on our website, there's a U.S. tour in March,
Okay.
and that'll be about 16 or 18 shows in the United States. Starts in New Orleans
Oh,
and
nice.
kind of goes up East Coast, Midwest. There's a couple of Canadian dates. So we're playing New York, which is in Boston, which I lived in Boston for 12 years. Joe lives in Boston. So for
I
me,
live in
it'll be
Connecticut. I
exciting
live in
playing
Connecticut.
those places.
You guys are hopping right over me. I live in Connecticut. So you're close.
Right. Well, then you got to come. I have to look at the web page
Yeah, it looks like you're
to
like
see.
you're like 2 hours each way from me though. That might be
Yeah,
a
you're in
little
hard.
hard. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to work in with a band in.
Where in Connecticut are you?
I live right side in Manchester. I'm right outside of Hartford. But right now I'm actually in
Oh,
Hartford.
outside of.
I'm at the Gold Building right now. So if you've gone to Hartford, you notice the Gold
Okay.
Building's that big gold building there. But
Right.
so yeah, you guys are close, but not, yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see what the dates are. With work, two and a half hours can be a drive each way on a work night for me. I don't mind putting
Yeah,
it in, but
that's crazy. And
I've done it
things
before,
could
but
change. Dates have moved around, so it's
yeah.
not impossible a date could change. Because I mean, I can't think of the name of it right now. I know there's a really good venue in Hartford, and I can't think of the name of it.
There's a
A
lot
big
of
one.
really good venues. Actually, a lot of bands are playing around here. I can't believe how many bands are playing in around me this year. Between playing at the Ridge House,
Right.
playing at the Space Ballroom in Hamden, a lot of bands that are playing that never played before. It's pretty surprising, actually.
Joe,
I
don't
don't.
you do some solo shows in Connecticut? You've done some?
Well, I played. I have a Rainbow tribute band and a Purple tribute band. So I played with the Rainbow tribute band. I played in Connecticut a bunch of times.
I thought so. I thought we
You
talked.
know, yeah. In my Rainbow tribute band, the drummer in Dawkin plays drums. BJ
Oh,
Zampa. So
right.
it's a it, and we play all the classic Dio stuff, but we play some of the Joe Lynn Turner stuff, and then we play a few Purple things as well. But it's a killer band, like great players, great singer. Black Knight's Castle is the name of the band. But we play in Connecticut. I'm from, so I live here in Boston, but I'm from New York, as you could hear by the way I talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we're doing that East Coast run in March. I think it starts on the 22nd, maybe,
Yeah.
and then allegedly in June we're supposed to do like a West Coast leg,
Yeah.
like the, it, because we're doing it. We're not doing it with a Nightliner, and we're not doing it with a bus. So they had to break it up instead of trying
Yeah.
to do the whole states. You can't do the whole states in like a sprinter. So And it's us, it's girl school. The girl school ladies are the big headliner, and us and Lillian X. That's the package.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So wait, so Lillian Axe is also playing with you guys?
Yeah,
Wait.
Lillian X is on the US package.
Yeah.
Wow. Lillian Axe is not headlining over a girl school in US?
You know, may flip some headline dates. I'm not sure, to be honest. And everybody's really cool. So when we played with Girls' School in the UK, somebody will say, we just switch back and forth between who headlines.
No,
And
it's not about that. It's like I just know that Girl School is less known here than Lillian Axe. I mean, I've had Steve on my show a bunch of times, so like Lillian Axe is just, I'm just saying, like, just for
yeah,
known. It's
well,
just
no,
surprising.
they're big. It'll probably be switching back and forth. Probably be like a co-headline thing, and one night Lillian Axe will headline, the next night Girl School. It'll probably depend on the cities.
Wow, what a good,
I don't know.
what a good lineup. That's a good show.
I don't know. It'll be a good show, I can tell you that, because guys and Lillian Axe are really cool and they're a very
Yeah.
good band. In Girls' School, they're fun. They're just the nicest people, really good band. They kick ass and they get the crowd's love them. Everybody loves them. and we get along great. We have a lot of fun with them. They sang on the backup on the last record, you know,
yeah,
a song.
You have a video for that one, yeah. I forgot what song it was now.
Great time with them.
This is awesome. I want to thank you, man. And I'll keep my eyes open for the dates if they change up closer to me. But it's all about economics. Film the club and economics is what it comes down to for you, for bands. You know?
Right.
But this has been fun. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Back again, you know?
2.5 hour drive, though, to New York. That's ridiculous, you know?
No.
To go there and then see a show and then drive home.
I won't even drive
to
New York.
I used to do that in high school.
Yeah, well, the traffic in New York is also, like, to get into New York is like two levels. It's like an onion. There's like levels into New York. It's just too much for me. I won't go to New York show unless I have a friend that's going and he's driving. I won't even drive in New York anymore. Like, I'm just like, won't do it. You know, I just can't.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
it's crazy.
I lived in Manhattan for a couple of years.
Yeah, see, you know, if you guys are playing closer, I don't mind making something in the Connecticut run area, but we'll see.
We just keep it on the website because a date can change.
Yeah.
There's a couple that have filled in, as you can see on the website there. Unknown. there could be a date change up and we might be playing closer. So
I'll put a bug in Giles here and you know, and so he'll hit me up if something changes, you know. Because I'm gonna talk to girl school too. We're gonna get some things going. So gentlemen, I want to thank you very much. This has been fun. Let's talk again, maybe your next album, or if I see you when you guys come around, we'll pick this up.
Absolutely.
I'm happy.
It's always fun talking about it. I like to talk, so as you can tell. So
I do too. That's why I do the show. It never gets
Joe, and I, Joe and I could bullshit all day with you. I mean, if you know, we just speak, it would never end. So yeah, this is really cool. Anytime, Sean, anytime.
Well, thank you very much. Great to have you on the show, and it's been awesome. Thank you, Joe.
Oh, sure. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
It was my pleasure to meet you guys, too. So it was really a lot of fun.